Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP. If you don't know what that means, it's an accredited estate planner. On the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online at wdiy.org under Public Affairs. And our topic this, well, let me give you the markets first. The markets were down today with the Dow closing at 51,594, the NASDAQ at 24,442, and the S&P at 7,316. And that was probably in response to the Fed keeping rates steady. Not sure, but, you know, every other day it's breaking news. So I just go with it. Our topic tonight is what I have learned as an advisor, and I also actually talked to a couple of my colleagues to get some input from them, too, so I thought I would share that information with you. We are live tonight, but we are not taking questions, but if you do have a question, you could submit that through email at yourfinancialchoices.com, yourfinancialchoices.com. And next week, I'm going to have a pre-recorded show. So if you have questions or show ideas or anything like that, that website is also always available to submit those too. So yourfinancialchoices.com. Here in the Lehigh Valley, where we air out of, we have Music Fest coming up. And that is going to be next week, which is why we're going to run a pre-recorded show. So talking about like what I have learned as an advisor, I have from time to time shared my random thoughts. I've shared sayings and things I've learned over the years from working with clients, not always just as an advisor, but just, you know, kind of getting to know people and how people think and habits and, you know, so many things that they do for approaching their financial decisions. But I thought I would run some of these questions by a couple of my colleagues as well, Tim Roof and Joe Goldfeder, who are both certified financial planners as well. And I asked them the question, what have you learned as a financial advisor? So I want to share that, and then I'll share some of my own thoughts as well to see if it, you know, informs listeners at all on how some financial advisors think, because I know how I think, and it was very, I was very happy to report that what Tim and Joe had responded with too. I was really proud of them, and it might not be what you expect when you talk about what has someone learned as a financial advisor. I think that generally one might automatically go to, you know, investments and talking about investments and risk tolerance and, you know, how you do investments, et cetera. And, you know, that wasn't the answers I got. And so I was really happy about that. So when I talked to them, for example, Tim, the very first thing he said when I said, what have you learned about being a, you know, what have you learned as a financial advisor? And the very first comment out of his mouth was, listen. And if you are working with financial advisors, it would be interesting to sit and observe. We have clients who many years ago, when they first came in to talk with us, only told us this later, that the husband was doing the talking and asking the questions, and the wife was sitting there very quietly. And they had an agreement that she observes, she watches to see how, you know, the people are engaging and how are we listening and how are we interacting. And you know, they were happy with that. But it was just interesting because we did not know that that was, you know, what they were doing intentionally to see how we worked. So listening was something that was very important. The very first thing that, that Tim thought of is, what have you learned as a financial advisor to listen? And because it's these little details that we can hear about that, that might inform decisions going forward. And we do talk about the details as well, too. The second thing he had said was compassionate. He's learned to be compassionate. So much in one's financial life revolves around life decisions, and those life decisions could include, you know, supporting parents, supporting children, supporting spouses, supporting your community. And there's a lot of compassion that is in those decisions when we think about when someone needs help, how are we helping them? Or compassion when you have a client who loses their job. They've always loved their job and they're let go. You have to have some compassion around that and help them to navigate the, you know, the steps going forward. So number one, you have to be able to listen well to understand the situation and the circumstances, but then you have to be compassionate about it too. Because when you are compassionate, you're trying to understand what it's like to be in that person's shoes and, you know, to be able to help them see the path going forward and the options going forward. Think long-term versus short-term. This is very important, thinking long-term versus short-term. When we're talking about working with clients and investing, typically we are talking about the long term, but we also always have to understand the short term. That's part of the listening as well. So in the listening, what do you need? What are your priorities? What are your goals? What are your immediate goals? What do you have going on right now? We need to understand that short term picture, obviously. But in doing that and understanding that short term picture, we need to also plan for that long term, you know, horizon, that timeline. Sometimes what people don't realize is when we're planning for clients, you may think, okay, we're going to spend this much, we're going to have these goals, and we're going to run out of money in X number of years, and that's just how we want it. But as financial advisors and fiduciaries and acting in your best interest, we also have to think about it might not be just, you know, your life expectancy. It could be your spouse's life expectancy too. So sometimes, like, if husband thinks he's going to die young and he wants to spend all the money and live, you know, play it all up, well, we might have to provide for a surviving spouse too. We might need to think about providing for long-term care. So I love to think about, and this is one of my comments, is to live today, but plan for tomorrow. Live today, but plan for tomorrow. And that comes into the thinking about the long-term versus the short-term. I think we have to think about the short-term as well, but thinking about the long-term as a financial advisor, when some people come into this industry very young and, you know, they have their whole lives ahead of them, but they don't realize their whole lives ahead of them might be 70 years and they're giving advice to maybe someone who's 70 years old. They don't know what that actually looks like in the end. So they may be thinking shorter term. We've got to think long term sometimes. Okay. So, another comment he made was inquisitive and curiosity. And interestingly, he said that, and you know, Tim said, Lori, you're always talking about being curious. I am always talking about being curious because I think that, and it's not that curiosity killed the cat, it's that the curiosity makes you aware of roadblocks and opportunities, and curiosity makes you think about, like, all the threads, you know, and following the threads. And that's what I like to think about, following the threads. It's curiosity, but it's also being, doing that planning. So we'll talk more about what we have learned as financial advisors when we come back from this break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Thank you. WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Lights, laughter, local celebrities, and a great cause. Tickets are now on sale for WDIY's Lehigh Valley Hollywood Squares happening Tuesday, October 27th at the State Theater in Easton. Join your favorite community personalities for a live game show with comedy, trivia, audience participation, and raffles, all benefiting WDIY. Get your tickets today at statetheater.org/event/Hollywood-squares and be part of one of the Lehigh Valley's most entertaining nights of the year.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1, also available on the WDIY app and many streaming services. We are talking about what I have learned as an advisor and what my colleagues have learned as advisors as well, which is kind of curious. It might not be what you think it is. We are live tonight, but we are not taking calls. If you have questions, those could be sent through the email at yourfinancialchoices.com. So in talking to Tim, what you've learned as a financial, and Joe, as a financial advisor, when we talked about inquisitiveness and curiosity, and then I mentioned details, these all came together. Learning the details, being inquisitive, being curious. You know, I always have to say to clients, I'm not being snoopy, I'm curious. And what I have found over the years is sometimes people will come in and they'll be a little bit guarded. They may not always want to tell their whole story. Maybe their story has twists and turns. Maybe their story has things in the closet that they don't like to tell people about. And it could really play into the planning that we're doing as financial advisors. So, you know, I'm also a CPA, and CPAs are one of the, you know, most trusted professions, supposedly. But really, and I don't have the stats or, you know, where that was reported from, but that's what I've heard in passing. But really, if you're working with a financial advisor, it would be really critical to be able to share pertinent information to your financial situation. For example, if there is perhaps a relative who may be special needs, or you have concerns about their mental health or their, you know, habits, these are critical factors that could come into play in planning, and especially critical for, you know, any listeners out there who may be aging parents. You know, we are passing assets on to the next generation, and maybe that next generation might have some issues. And let me just kind of explain why being inquisitive and curious as financial advisors and understanding the details could play into the planning for you, and why it would be very important for you to be able to understand that perspective, understand why someone is asking you these questions and the importance and relevance of it. So, for example, if you're not telling us that you have a child who may have a drug problem or, you know, has special needs, the planning might be, okay, you name your spouse as primary beneficiary, you name the kids as contingent beneficiary, and then you pass away, and now those children are inheriting assets outright. Outright meaning they have full access to those assets. Well, if we were in the situation where you may have had a child who was special needs, we may not want them to inherit those assets because it could interfere with government benefits that they would be eligible for. And sometimes people don't realize that there are certain services that may be available to those people needing them only through government resources, meaning they may not get the same access or services if they're kind of trying to go out and get them on their own. It might be, you know, I can't exactly tell you what they are, but there could be certain benefits, programs that they may be eligible for only through the, you know, government benefits. So you may not want them to inherit assets outright. or if, you know, they're on some kind of disability, if they have a drug problem, you may not want them to inherit if they're going to, you know, drain the assets that they've just inherited, particularly if you might have another child who maybe has grandchildren and this other child may not, and maybe the assets would not, you know, would be drained, and then, you know, you just kind of wasted all of the hard work and earnings and growth and savings that you had, you know, for your whole career and life. So this is why sometimes it's really important to share those little details. If you have children who may be married but in an unstable marriage, it's important to know that, because that could come into play with some of the planning as well. But not only the planning for you, but the planning that you may convey to your children, meaning you could say to your child, you know what, I hope and wish that everything with your marriage works out. You know, I hope you can work through it, counseling, whatever it might be, particularly if there's children. But if in our planning we have you inheriting and you're in a rocky marriage, there may be ways to help protect some of those assets that are passing to you so they don't become part of like a divorce fight. So again, it's these little sensitive, you know, family dynamics or issues that you may not want to share but could become very important in planning. I would imagine that the same thing would happen when you're doing estate planning. If you're talking to your lawyer, you may or may not think these are important, but it could be very important, and it would be important to share those with your attorney, particularly if the attorney is drafting documents for you, that they could very, very easily incorporate some of this language in the documents, but allow enough flexibility and options for, you know, the eventual personal representative, executor, and or trustee to give them enough options that if the situation changes, it allows them to pivot or, you know, redirect. Really quick example, if there is someone who perhaps we have two children and one child's pretty responsible and the other child has struggled with addiction over the years, but they're trying to get their life together. Maybe you as parents are concerned that they could relapse. And so you're not sure if you want to give them part of your assets or estate outright. You could let the attorney know that. And then the attorney could always put in language that says, okay, if both of us are gone now, each spouse is gone, and we have two children, 50-50 to each child, but this one child, their share is going to go into trust. And maybe the other child is a trustee, or if the other child, that's too much responsibility, you could always name a corporate trustee. And with the flexibility that says, if at any time my trustee feels that they could distribute the trust at their discretion, if, you know, these certain circumstances, you know, apply. And you know, that seems to work. So if that child, when they had the addiction problem, was 15 years ago, and they've been great for 15 years, you might not need that separate trust. And you're giving the other child, let's say, the discretion to say, oh, yeah, you know, brother or sister's doing really well now, we can do it outright. So in knowing some of these little nuances, attorneys can, you know, draft documents that allow flexibility, allow options, and, you know, it's just gives you maybe some peace of mind, because I've seen too many people be stressed out about this, and they actually don't make any decisions because they're so stressed out and they can't decide. But the attorneys can provide that flexibility in the documents to kind of relieve you of some of that stress you have for what you think might be disinheriting a child or restricting a child, but maybe you don't have to, you know, be as strict as that. They can give some flexibility in the documents. Okay. But again, that's part of, I'm kind of going off here a little bit, but this is why it's very important to understand, if you're working with a financial advisor or an attorney, someone that they understand your particular situation, it's just critical. Folks, we are at the second break. And we'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Are you saying out with the old, in with the new when it comes to your old car? WDIY's vehicle donation program will turn your ride into your favorite programs on Lehigh Valley Public Radio. The towing is free, all the paperwork is taken care of, and your gift is tax deductible. For more information, call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or visit wdiy.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Sieber. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. And tonight we're talking about what I've learned as an advisor and what my colleagues have learned as well. So it was great that I could get their input before coming over to the show. Always interesting to see how a financial advisor's mind might work. One might think they're only thinking about investments, but that's not always the case. And it might be a good question to ask your financial advisor to see what they are thinking and what they're talking about. Not all advisors are created equally. So in talking about being curious and learning the details, really, really important, learning the details. And don't be afraid to share them. I think it's just so important. There have been times where I've been in meetings where I learned someone's pregnant before they've told the family. So it's like it was critical for them to tell the financial advisor, but they didn't tell their parents yet. So you never know what you might hear, but it is really, really important. Okay, so just keep that in mind. So from learning as an advisor, what did we learn? Listening so important. Being compassionate is so important. Thinking long term versus short term. But I think we always have to think short term as well. Learning the details and how understanding the details can provide options. I say at the end of every show, be proactive, not reactive. And in the ways we can be proactive is being in front of the decisions. And that is why learning the details is so important. You know, when clients come in, we always ask, some of the first things we ask are, how much cash do you have in the bank? Do you have any anticipated expenses? How much are they? You know, are you going to do this? Are you going to do that? If we asked a simple question like, what are your goals? And someone might say, well, I want to retire at 65. That's the least detail probably that one could get. And it doesn't really help with the planning. So rather than say, what are your goals? It could be, well, sure, we can start with what are your goals, and then we might hear, I want to retire at 65. And then the next questions that would follow up is, okay, do you have a pension? Do you have, you know, what is your Social Security? Do you have your Social Security illustration? If you have a pension, what are your pension options? Let's get an illustration of the pension options. If you're going to retire at 65, what health insurance are you going to have? Are you going on Medicare? Is there a spousal benefit? If you're going on Medicare, what is the plans? What are the supplemental plans? All of a sudden, just to say, I want to retire at 65, you know, generates like a zillion other questions. And quite often, we can't cover all the questions in like an hour meeting, but we can start to do the framework for what that retirement would look like, how we're going to replace the paycheck, and understanding all those details and the implications of what has to get put in place so that you can retire at 65 and if it's feasible. I had, when I first started at Valley National, many, many years ago, we did a financial plan for someone. They wanted to retire at 50. And I remember telling them, you know, they really couldn't. It didn't look like they could retire. They would need to work, you know, X number of years more. And they were very, very upset with me. And as the years went on, you know, life takes twists and turns. And that person ended up going through a divorce. And I think, luckily, they kept working. They were still working because when someone's going through a divorce, that kind of changes the whole financial landscape. All of a sudden, one may not have life in, or health insurance through the other spouse. Now you might have to get your own health insurance. Now we have to look at where's the cash flow coming from? Did you only save in a retirement account? Did you save in a bank account? How were the assets split? So there's a lot of implications to that. But, you know, I think if we had told that person they could retire and then they end up getting a divorce or going through a divorce, that changes the whole situation. And that person could have been in a much more difficult situation had they retired that early versus where they were by continuing to work. Much different situation. They're doing great. All right. So some of the learning the details, lots of details around financial planning, which is one of the regular topics I talk about, which is understanding the implications of the elements of your financial life. So I'm not going to go into that terribly much tonight, but why it's so important, and my colleagues understand this as well and had mentioned this, is understanding that a decision in one part of your financial life impacts the other. This goes back to understanding the details. It goes back to understanding, you know, being curious and inquisitive, that if we make a decision in your cash flow, or if we make a decision in your investments, or we make a decision for tax planning, it has a, you know, like a cascading impact, perhaps. Quite often, I'm not sure I would ever be able to describe taking an action in one element of your financial life and it not having an impact on some other element. So, for example, you know, estate planning includes naming beneficiaries and naming primary beneficiaries and contingent beneficiaries, and that impacts taxes for those beneficiaries when they're inheriting, perhaps. So now we just had estate planning and we had taxes. So those could have implications. It could have implications for those heirs or survivors. If someone needs cash for their cash flow, and we might have to sell investments or take a distribution from an IRA, that impacts the investments, it impacts the cash flow, it impacts the taxes, it could impact the, you know, investment allocation. If we're pulling from a retirement account, it impacts, you know, future required minimum distributions, current, you know, distributions, etc. So understanding the implications of the elements of your financial life is also very relevant and important. And I will mention that not every financial advisor can, you know, look at all of these elements. Many people who say they are financial advisors are really investment advisors. They're talking about the investments. They're getting paid to do the investments, and that may be their lane. I've talked on other shows about certain professionals staying in their lane. If an attorney stays in their lane, their insurance provider stays in their lane, the CPA stays in their lane, the investment advisor may stay in their lane. You may not be working with a financial advisor who's kind of looking at all of these pieces or the, you know, the elements of your financial life. Even certain certified financial planner professionals may or may not be able to provide this overall kind of view or aspect of your financial life if they're working for a particular firm that may restrict them from giving tax advice, etc. So you want to watch out for that as well. You might hear someone say, I'm not allowed to give tax advice. And they may not understand your tax situation. They may not see your tax return. So I'm not saying every financial advisor can think like this or be like this. We're very fortunate where we are that we, you know, in acting as a fiduciary with our certified financial planner professionals and following kind of the CFP board guidelines, that we're able to kind of do this big picture. Folks, we're at the halfway point. If you have questions, those can be sent through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com, yourfinancialchoices.com. We will be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Tonight we are talking about what I've learned as an advisor, as well as my colleagues, Tim Roof and Joe Goldfeder. Kind of did a little quick inquiry to them before the show tonight, and was just so happy to hear what they think is important and what they've learned as an advisor. Listening, being compassionate, thinking long term, being inquisitive, curious, learning the details, understanding the implications of the elements of your financial life. And Tim mentioned never stop learning. That is something that is strongly encouraged at our firm, never stop learning. And some people might not realize the, you know, continuing education or education requirements that financial advisors have. And it depends, again, on what kind of advisor you are. So, for example, as a certified financial planner professional, we are required to get 30 hours of continuing education over a 2-year period. And that includes ethics hours as well. And as a CPA, we need to get 80 hours every 2 years. And that also has ethics element to it. So that already is quite a bit of a continuing education. Again, 30 hours for a certified financial planner professional, 80 hours for a CPA in a 2-year period. But even beyond that, as registered representatives, we have continuing education from FINRA, the regulatory authority for brokers, on things like money laundering, seniors, working with seniors, annuities, scams, you know, understanding various red flags to watch out for. So it's all really good, and it's all really, I think, applicable and very, very important to keep it in front of us all the time, that learning, particularly for compliance and for customer scams that one may be able to alert a client to. If we're watching out for things that seem suspicious, if our broker-dealer or our custodian is watching out for our clients for things of suspicious activity, you know, we have it kind of in front of us all the time. So it helps being very aware of these situations. And then, of course, sharing those kind of red flags with our clients so that they stay alert to them as well. And, you know, you'll hear from us, like if we have clients who call and ask for money, we say we have to talk to you. We want to make sure that you're the one asking for it. We want to make sure we know where it's going to and what account and, you know, basically perhaps what purpose sometimes if it seems a little bit unusual. And those are sometimes the activities or the circumstances that we become aware of through that continuing education. So I love that Tim had mentioned that never stop learning for those reasons, but also just to keep abreast of all of the changes, because when we talk about the planning and understanding the details, it is quite a lot to navigate when there's constantly changing legislation for, you know, tax purposes. For example, in a couple weeks, I'm going to talk about RMDs, required minimum distributions. I mean, I would say to you that the complexity of understanding required minimum distributions has just exploded. It's very complicated, and it can depend on, you know, if you're the owner, if you're the beneficiary, you know, who's inheriting, what are you inheriting, is it, when are you inheriting, at what age? I mean, it's just become so complex, which again goes back to the listening, the compassion, the inquisitive curiosity. We have to understand what accounts you have. Sometimes people don't realize they have accounts at other companies, other custodians. They might not even know what kind of account they have, because sometimes it's not obvious what kind of account you have. And the rules will be different if it's, for example, an IRA versus a 401k versus an inherited IRA versus an inherited Roth IRA versus a Roth IRA if it's your own Roth IRA. If the Roth portion in your, if you have a Roth, a designated Roth within a 401k, it can be very complicated. So we're going to talk about that in a couple weeks, but that's the part about never stop learning, because the laws and rules are always changing. So, for example, I still have people who might think that the required minimum distribution age was 70 and a half. That was many years ago. I don't have too many people saying that anymore. Or 72, but it's 73. But guess what? It's changing to 75. So anybody born in 1960 or later, the new required minimum distribution age is 75. That does not mean you should wait that long. It you know, it's all part of the planning. It depends on your circumstances. And I always say we're not just planning for you, but we could be planning for your heirs. We could be planning, which could be family. It could be charities, nonprofits, could be spouses, whomever it might be. There's a lot of planning that could be impacted by the kinds of accounts you have and, you know, the amounts of money that you have in those accounts. So we want to kind of stay on top of changing tax legislation. It's funny, Tim had said one of the things, don't try to be cute. And I thought, well, what's that mean? Don't try to be cute. We all want to be cute. But no, what he meant is avoid speculation. Don't, you know, try not to get, you know, like ahead of yourself thinking you've got the inside on, you know, intuitive or psychology or psychic, you know, readings of the market. It's better to try to have some rules around investing. So now I'm moving away from kind of the soft concepts of what we've learned as advisors to kind of maybe now talking a little bit more about the nuts and bolts of investing, for example, to have some rules around what you're doing to eliminate the guesswork. And that could be, you know, rebalancing periodically. It could be keeping an eye out for over concentration, making sure you stay diversified. And what does that diversification look like? What does your asset allocation look like? And having some rules around what you're going to do there so that you're not acting emotional. And that is something Tim had said too. You know, we've got to try to keep from acting emotionally when we're talking about the markets. Tim and I were just talking about a stock today, I won't mention it, that over the course of, you know, 52 weeks has swung, you know, $300 a share, basically. In fact, 300, and what am I saying? In the course of a year, I think it's swung about $600 a share. So that could make someone very emotional because it's up and it's down and it's up and it's down. And you could be reacting emotionally to that. You get caught up in the hype of it, or you get caught up in the, you know, the detriment of it. So if you have some rules around some of your investing, that might help take the guesswork out and kind of keep you more, you know, steady. We have a saying, we've heard this many times, time in the market, not timing the market. Joe had mentioned too, talking about understanding as an investment advisor, understanding the different investment vehicle options. You know, when we talk about like options on a car, when you're buying a car, now I always buy used cars, the options are already, I just get what I get. But if someone's buying a new car, sometimes they'll, you know, try to get certain options for that car. And those options serve different purposes, right? And the same thing happens with investment vehicles. Some investment vehicles have different options, so you might want to make sure that you understand those, and they might have different tax implications, for example. And the same would apply for understanding how the registration of accounts can impact some of your financial decisions and the impact of how maybe an account would pass on to heirs, etc. So when we talk about like different investment vehicles, what I might be talking about there could be IRAs, individual IRA. We could talk about Roth IRA. We could talk about within a 401k, we could have a Roth feature within a 401k. We could have employer stock within a 401k. We could have after-tax dollars within a 401k. And these all have different implications in our planning and in the tax aspect. And this goes back to the details and the curiosity. I mean, if you have people who aren't asking about, you know, let me see the statement, and you hand them a statement that has the, you know, the total value of the account, and they say, hey, yeah, yeah, good. Your 401k has, you know, $1 million in it. Let's roll it over. And they never looked at the detail. That's a flag. That's a red flag. You need to understand the detail of what's in those accounts as well, because different investment vehicles have different implications. Really quick, just as an example, if you have employer stock in a 401k, I'm just like want to shoot out like big warning signs, flash, flash, flash. If you have employer stock in a 401k, you want to make sure you know what the cost basis is. And that has a huge impact on future planning for you. If there's after-tax dollars in a 401k, flash, 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 big warning. You want to understand what the after-tax dollars are, because what you do with that 401k when you understand, you know, what's under the hood of it could have a huge impact on your further planning. There's tax advantages to employer stock in a plan. There's tax advantages to after-tax money. And for example, you can roll over after-tax money into a Roth, but if someone's not looking at the guts of your 401k and they just say, let's roll it over, you might miss those after-tax dollars going into a Roth, which could grow income tax-free. And now, unfortunately, you have cost basis in an IRA, and it just adds an extra level of complication to your tax preparation for the future and to your heirs who are inheriting, because it retains that tax characteristic. So you really need to make sure if you're not understanding it, that your advisor is asking, hey, I want to see those details. I want to see, you know, you gave me the dollar amount, but I need the details of the statement. Can make a big, big difference. And that could make an impact too, even while you're working. Maybe your advisor isn't advising you on the 401k, but they still might want to ask you about it and understand what's in it. Because let's pretend you're working and you have employer stock in a 401k, and you decide to, you know, sell all your employer stock before you retire because you think, well, I'm going to retire and I'm going to roll this over. That might not have been a good decision. So this is, again, one of those things that it might be important for your advisor to know. Tax impact on the registration types and accounts. We kind of talked about that a little bit. If, for example, where the registration type could make a difference, let's pretend you have a joint account with a spouse and one of you passes away, then the account, if it's a brokerage account, would get a step up in basis on only half of it. But perhaps you have an account in your own name for all these years and you've kind of always kept it separate from your spouse. It's not joint, but you could put a designation on it called the transfer on death, a TOD, transfer on death. Well, that account, if I own that account, it's TOD to my spouse. When I die, it's non-probate. It goes to my spouse because I put a beneficiary on it. And maybe my account, you know, had a cost basis of, you know, $50,000 and it's now worth $300,000. Well, if I die holding that account and it's TOD, transfer and death to my spouse, it gets a step up in basis to the $300,000. My spouse could sell everything the next day and have no gains on it. So that registration could be important in your estate planning as well as tax planning. We are at the last break. If you have questions, you can send those through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com. We will be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY 88.1 offers many choices and real voices. Folk music, from folk classics to the Gaelic traditions of the British Isles, to bluegrass and old-time music of Appalachia, to the modern-day singer-songwriters telling the story of today's world. You'll find it all here on WDIY. Listen and enjoy the wide variety of folk music every weekday evening, 7 to 9 p.m., just after NPR News headlines, and Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. on 88.1 WDIY and streaming at WDIY.org.
WDIY's Music Fest features begin this week. We'll be welcoming bands and artists into the WDIY studios for live performances and conversations. Coming up next, it's an interview and live performance with singer-songwriter Kathy Ritter. This Thursday at 3 p.m. during The Blend, here on WDIY.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and I'm just giving you some input on, you know, what financial advisors have learned, myself and a couple of my colleagues. And I want to go back to, for a moment, talking about the account registration and the impact that that has on further planning. So, for example, I mentioned we might have a joint account with a husband and wife, and or two spouses. And what might happen if one passes away, if it's joint, I said it gets a step up in basis on half. And some people might not understand what that means. But in my example of if I owned an account by myself with a transfer on death to my spouse, I said if the cost basis was $50,000 and it's worth $300,000, it gets a step up in basis to $300,000. So let's say I bought some stock for $50,000 and I sold the day before I die at $300,000, I would have a gain of $250,000. Well, if I don't sell it and the day I die it's worth $300,000, the cost basis is no longer $50,000 to my beneficiary. It's now $300,000 in that story. That was an individual account with the transfer on death designation. My spouse, to my spouse gets the step up in basis. It could be to my child. It could be to my neighbor. It could be to anybody. Transfer on death is beneficiary designation, makes it non-probate. So that could be important to know. But what some people might not realize is when we have spouses and the surviving spouse gets a step up in basis on their spouse's half, those are like separate lots. And what people might not realize or pay attention to is, let's pretend I have an overexposure of a particular stock and I hadn't sold it because I didn't want to pay the taxes. Some people are so against taxes, they're like, no, I'm not going to sell it because I don't want the taxes. Even if it might be a good idea to sell it. So in these circumstances, in my story, I have an account worth $300,000. The cost basis is $50,000. If it's joint, in essence, what that means is I have $25,000 basis for my half on half the account of $150,000. And if I'm going to have myself die, if I die and it's going to my spouse, it's a joint account. My half is no longer a basis of 25, it's a basis of 150. Okay, so now my surviving spouse has a cost basis in a $300,000 account of $175,000. So if we just look at the totals, that's what it would look like. And then one might think, well, gosh, I've got $175,000 basis now on my 300, no longer 25 basis, you know, or 50,000 basis. I have $175,000 basis on my $300,000 account. And I might think, oh, it's still too much for taxes. But when you click into your portfolio and you look at lots, we call those tax lots. When we look into the lots, we would see that half of the account, let's pretend it's one position, what we would end up seeing is X number of shares with a cost basis of 150 worth 150, and the other lot would be the original lot with a cost basis of 25, half of my original 50, and 150. So if one needed to diversify or remove some over concentration, trim the position, rebalance, we could always look at those shares by lots instead of by total and manage the tax consequences. So again, this goes back to understanding the details, being inquisitive, being curious, not just acting or reacting. It's really paying attention to the details of the situation to maximize the tax strategy or tax planning when we can and where we can. I often will say to clients, we can't always manage it. If you need money, you need money. And sometimes that means we do have to take a tax hit. But where we can and when we can could be, you know, helpful. Why not? I always say to people, if you saw $20 on the floor, would you pick it up? Usually they say yes. So, you know, where we can manage tax consequences, we certainly try to. All right. So that would be something important. And Joe had pointed that out. And I thought that was really good. So understanding the tax impact on registration types and accounts. And the big one we're seeing right now, too, which is really critical. And I think it's the piece that people seem to be always the most afraid of, which is understanding your estate planning, the transfer of wealth that happens. And particularly now there's, you know, a lot of transfer of wealth for people who have saved and earned all their years and had the mindset of we want to give something to our children. We hear that all the time. We want to pass something on to our children. You know, we came from a generation of maybe parents, what would be listeners, grandparents who didn't have much. You always want to leave the next generation better off. And quite often that is what we hear. We want to pass on something to our children. So in doing so, you know, if that's your mindset, then that should be your impetus, your motivation to doing your proper estate planning through your documents and through your asset titling and through your beneficiary designations. It would be critical. You know, if you want to pass on assets in a, you know, efficient way, you have to be engaged in your own understanding of estate planning and financial planning. So, for example, if I saw someone had, they weren't my client, because this wouldn't have happened. They weren't my client. They had real estate, IRAs, Roth IRAs, and some other accounts. And they named the estate the beneficiary on everything. And I'm not really sure why this happened, but the documents had the bulk of the assets going to charity with certain amounts going to one individual. Now, if that had been my client, what I would have talked about with the owner of these would be, Roth IRAs are income tax free. They grow income tax free. Now, if you're a non-spouse beneficiary, we do have a requirement to take Roth IRAs out within 10 years if we're a non-spouse beneficiary and not an eligible designated beneficiary. But why wouldn't I give the individual the Roths and let the charities have the IRAs, the taxable IRAs, or whatever part of the estate that they were going to get? If the amount that was going to go to the individual beneficiary would have been that this deceased person wanted that individual to get, if it could have been satisfied by giving them 100% of the Roth IRAs, doesn't that make more sense than giving Roth IRAs to the estate, which now made them probate? The IRAs went to the estate, which now made them probate, when they could have gone as a beneficiary designation directly to the charities that wouldn't have had to go through probate. And the charities, all they would have needed was a death certificate. Very interesting. I wasn't my client. I wasn't involved in the planning, but I would just love to go back to the team that had done that planning to say, you know, why was this done this way? Why did it happen this way? Now, we do remember talking at the top of the show, we do have to listen and listen to our clients. And if we present something to them and say, did you consider this? Did you think about this? And they still say, no, no, no. Well, you know, the client is the ultimate director of their own, you know, financial decisions. But as advisors who see, you know, situations over and over and over and over and over again, you know, we kind of develop some instincts around some of this. And, you know, sometimes to me, it's about educating the clients, educating them so that they can make the best informed decisions. And quite often what I see is sometimes professionals don't take the time to educate, you know, clients. Otherwise, they would maybe see, you know, how this could make a difference. Okay. So that is important in understanding the transfer of wealth and how critical it is. And, you know, quite often we can say, well, you know, you're going to be dead. What do you care? You don't care what happens after you're gone. But, you know, I go back to being a good steward of your, you know, of your wealth. If you worked so hard all those years and you've accumulated some wealth, again, whether it's for individuals or heirs or charity, why wouldn't you want to see that, you know, maximized to the extent that you can, just simply by being smart about your beneficiary designations or your asset titling or where you put certain assets. So, you know, there's little nuances to all of this. And, you know, one of the things I always like to say is your financial situation is as different as your thumbprint. So sometimes, just like listening to this show, this podcast, this show, I mean, this is educational information. It may or may not apply to your situation. Your situation is unique. You can talk to your neighbors, you can talk to your family, and your situation, guess what, is still unique. It's unique to you. Your desires, your wishes, your hopes, your dreams are unique to you. And just because a sibling is doing something one way does not mean you have to do it the same way. So just, you know, kind of keep that all in mind as well. Some other thoughts I always like to share. What I say, my husband bought me a special kind of sign for my desk. I have it at my home now. And it says, it's not business, it's personal. So quite often we hear things like, oh, don't worry, you know, it's not personal, it's business. Well, I like to say it's not business, it's personal, because it's personal to you. Reminder, live for today, but plan for tomorrow. Your situation is as different as your thumbprint. Don't compare or keep up with the Joneses. So those are some of the thoughts I have as well. But I would like to concur with my colleagues about listening and being compassionate and understanding the details, because it is the, you know, that saying is so true when we talk about the devil in the devil's in the details. It makes a big difference. And sometimes another analogy I give clients is we have to peel back the onion, and sometimes we can't do that all at once because it can get overwhelming. I mean, sometimes that's why people don't do the actions they need to do, because they are overwhelmed. So if we just kind of peel back the onion and do it like a layer at a time, it makes it a lot easier. So if you've been afraid, don't be afraid anymore and just take an action on any item. And it's empowering, and it can move you forward and help you do the planning that you need to do for yourself and or, you know, your legacy that you're going to leave. Okay, so folks, I hope you found some of this interesting tonight. Thank you for being here with us. And as a reminder, questions can always be sent through yourfinancialchoices.com, as well as show ideas. We really appreciate those. And I have done a number of shows based on those suggestions. So if you have something you want to learn more about, I'm happy to research it for you and do a show on it. Next week, we're going to have a pre-recorded show for Music Fest. And then the week after, we're going to talk about the complexities of required minimum distributions. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.